ready.
Man, this whole society got our women looking at themselves crazy, man. Can you imagine if a dude was walking around telling him he didn't want to wear a pair of khakis because it made his dick look big, man?
For real talk.
You ain't ready for the relationship your grandmother and granddaddy had. You ready to leave your dude if he don't text you back fast enough.
All the time.
And see, that's what's so crazy to me, right? Because you can be against police brutality and not want cops to die. The two ideas ain't mutually exclusive.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span, and this is episode number 67 of the report. And today, your man got a special guest. I got a real special guest, man. A really good friend of mine, man. We go a long ways back. Really successful brother, man. Entrepreneur, founder, and CEO of Torrance Protection Agency down in Atlanta. Give it up for my man, Torrance Fields, man. Tell everybody what's up, brother.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's a pleasure to be here. It's been a long time. We've been talking about doing this for a while, huh?
Yeah, we have, man. I've been trying to get this dude on here for quite some time. Y'all really don't understand. This man is a hard guy to catch up with to get him on this show, man. Y'all don't understand the amount of work it took for me to get him on here, man. But, yeah, man, really appreciative of my brother coming on, man, to discuss not only just business, but some of the mistakes made in opening your own business, some of the things he's learned. Get some security tips too, man, because he's a executive protection security firearms instructor.
Yeah, that's right.
All of that, right?
I'm not an executive protection instructor. Okay, but I do provide executive protection.
Oh, indeed. Make sure we get that right. But before we get into all of that, let you guys know how you can get in touch with me here at the Span Report and let your voice be heard. You can hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. I will play those messages on the show and, of course, respond to you here on the show as well. You can hit me up on the email. The email to the show is feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. I will read those emails and reply to those emails again here on the Span Report. You can also chop it up with your boy on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms, of course, is Mr. Span, Mr._Span. So chop it up with me there. And for all of your Span Report needs, go to thespanreport.com. All the episodes, all of the videos are all available at thespanreport.com. And as a matter of fact, another way that you can get your voice heard on the show, leave those YouTube comments, right? And I know a lot of folks, they'd be like, you know, man, you crazy as hell for doing the YouTube comments, man. But nah, seriously, if it's a legitimate comment, and it's relevant to what we're talking about on the show, I will read those comments on the show as well. And of course, leave me an iTunes review. Leave me a Stitcher Radio review. Let me know what you're thinking about the show. Let your voice be heard, man. Real talk. But yeah, man. I got my boy here, right? And we go way back. We go a long ways back. High school. We was on the same ball squad together, right? Can you tell the people who hit the game-winning shot for the KL Championship in
1998? In 1998. Oh, let's see. You know, we're getting up there in age, so I tend to forget.
You better get it right, player.
None other than number 37.
Indeed. You know, and the funny thing is, that shot came at the beginning of the game.
And it was the game winning shot.
Hey, it was the opening game. It was the opening score. It was a 3-pointer. That was the only 3 points I scored, and we won the game by 3. I'm saying it's the game winning shot. I'm just saying.
Hey, so how you tell the story, right?
Indeed, man. Indeed. Now
how you tell the story. I talk about those days a lot. I keep trying to convince my kids that I used to dunk a basketball. And, you know, I kind of get that look. So I'm an old head now. That's always trying to convince me.
Yeah,
that
man.
I used to do that I can't do no more.
It's funny, man, how your body changes and shit that you used to be able to do, you can't necessarily do no more. I live vicariously through my NBA 2K on the PlayStation, bro. I can't do those things no more. And there's no way in hell I would even try to attempt to do it anymore now.
Lord have mercy.
Yeah, man. But first things first, man. First things first. One of the first things I wanted to ask you, man. I never knew that, like, security or, like, that was something that you were into, right? So let the folks know what exactly, when exactly you came to the decision that, like, being a security expert was something that you really wanted to get into.
Well, I think security kind of found me. As you know, I didn't work typical teenage jobs. You know, my first job was a lifeguard, and I did that throughout high school. Mm-hmm. So I had already, you know, had, you know, special training and caring for people, and that was just kind of my thing anyway. You know, kind of just a personality of mine. I've always been pretty good at taking care of myself and always have been a defender of, you know, people who couldn't. So mm-hmm. I kind of later on realized that this was kind of natural. It came kind of natural for me. But when I moved here to Atlanta, I got my very first security guard job. And I always say that my security career started in the lifeguard industry.
Okay.
But when I moved to Atlanta, I got my first security guard job, and I worked for a black company. It was my first time ever working for a black-owned company, and that was amazing for me. And through that, the owner of that company kind of taught me some trades and taught me a few things, but he also kept me away from a lot of things, you know. But at the time, I was 21, and I just really was like, you know, I was really amped by this, and it's something that, you know, seemed like it came very easy to me, you know. So I don't know if I necessarily chose that career path or kind of just walked into it as a necessity to feed my family, because, you know, as you know, I moved to Atlanta with absolutely no job, you know. So my very first job when I got here was as a security officer.
Okay, yeah. Now, about that move to Atlanta, man, what was it about Atlanta, you know, that you decided, like, that was the place where you wanted to be and that you wanted to raise your family there? What was it about Atlanta that made you just want to say, you know what, this is what we need to do?
I think Atlanta just kind of happened to me as well. You know, those people that know me know why. But for the most part, I had started studying a lot of teachings by a pastor here by the name of Creflo Dollar. He's kind of well known. Well, not kind of well known. He's one of the most well known preachers all over the world.
Yeah.
And you know, at that age, I was so impressionable, and the things that he was saying actually transformed and informed my life for me. And I've always been a risk taker. You know, I look back now, I'm 34 years old, and you know, if I had to be 34, you know, moving to a new city with two babies and you know, absolutely no support, you know, I don't know if I would do it, but I was always big on faith. And you know, one of my biggest motivations was to attend that church.
Okay. All right. Now, going into, you know, the fact that, you know, you said your first security job, you worked for a black-owned company, and you learned a lot there. At what point did it get to where you felt like, you know what, this is something that I can branch out and do for myself, that I can do on my own? When did that realization come?
I worked that job and I got a lot of experience, but I've been several places in the security industry. A lot of people don't know, but I actually used to do the armored car jobs, and I used to do the ATM machines. So I've been all over, all the way through government security. I was a security officer over at the Centers for Disease Control for about 5 years.
Yeah.
I was at a place where I wanted to build the kind of company. I wanted to build the place that I had never worked for. Okay. To me, business kind of made sense. It's kind of easy to me. The act of actually doing security was natural to me, so there was never any hiccups in that area. But I think a lot of times what I did lack was the maturity, and I'm glad I lacked the maturity at that time, because the immaturity is actually what enabled me to take the huge risk, you know, and starting my own business.
Now, what was like one of the first things that you felt like, I don't know, you felt like you might have been unprepared for, like something that you never saw coming, as far as like running your own business? What were you unprepared for?
One of the biggest things that I think people are not prepared for is growth.
Okay.
You're gonna grow. Everybody wants, you know, 3 or 4 contracts, but you know, having more people entails more supervision. And I think a lot of times I wasn't prepared for growth. I wasn't prepared for the financial part of growth. I wasn't prepared for the for the management part of growth. You know, of course we're at a place now where I just can't watch. It's impossible to watch over everything and everybody. That's impossible.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, I wasn't prepared to bring on managers and actually relinquish control sometimes and trust people. That's very difficult to do, you know. And a lot of times, you know, that's why a lot of people just decide to stay small.
Okay. Now, I know a lot of this conversation, or some of this conversation is, I'm asking because, you know, we've had some discussions about Dame Dash and his issue in mm-hmm. his views about entrepreneurship, right? So I got a couple clips, man, that I wanted to play, and I really wanted to just kind of like pick your brain and get your thoughts on what it is that Dame is saying, right? So here's the first one. Take a listen to this one.
If a man doesn't want to be the boss, then he's not a real man. Every real man wants to be a boss. Who do the girls like? The boss. So everyone that has girlfriends, they're going to keep their girls away from the boss because he's the most appealing, right?
Is that one of the reasons you've had a lot of problems with, like,
I don't know
artists?
Why. I've always been the boss. I don't know. Those are not problems for me when men don't want to be around. That's better for me. I run into their women other places. It's all right.
All right. Now, funny thing is, listening to how you talk about how you came into coming into your own business, was that your mentality of, you know, why you wanted to do your own thing? Because you didn't want a boss.
Mm-hmm.
Was that it?
Well, you have to look at my track record, right? I've never been the model student. I've never been the model employee.
Okay.
Anything that I'm, you know, I started car washes, man, when I was like 6 years old, and I figured out how not to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, but get paid, and everybody else was washing cars. So, you know, before I moved to Atlanta, you know, I was getting fired from jobs for being late every day. So, yeah. You know, before I moved from Atlanta, I bought a little pickup truck to help my brother move, and I ended up turning that into a little business where I was moving furniture for people, and I figured out, you know, how to do as least work as possible. But I've always had an ambition to always be on top in anything I've ever done. You remember our very first year together that we met at high school. I came back to school after being a dropout, came back, you know, out of shape. So yeah. Let's say my very first year, I was very sucky because I was out of shape, and I got most improved player that year.
Yeah, you said picks,
but the
man.
Following year, I came back and I was team captain. So I've always had a thing to advance. I've never been in a position where I didn't want to advance, and I've never been in a position where people didn't advance. So I understand what he's saying in that personality portion, but, you know, his delivery may not be something that we all agree with, but I think if you stick every boss in the room, you're going to come up with that same thing. It's just going to be a variation of ways that you're going to say that.
Yeah. And you know what? I think that was the thing that, that was pretty much what I had been saying from the very beginning about, you know, all the brouhaha that was Dame Dash and this interview was simply the fact that even though he was dropping some, you know, knowledge to a certain degree, that the delivery of that knowledge was buried in all this BS. So because it was buried in all this BS, for anybody who really needed to hear it, they got to sift through all this BS in order to get to all of the good stuff that you may be saying to them. And, you know, a lot of that stuff gets lost in translation, or the fact that there's just simply people that don't like Dame Dash. And, you know, yeah, I mean, just put it out there. There's a lot of people that don't like Dame Dash. He doesn't come across as, you know, a likable guy. You may have to respect him, but you don't necessarily like him, right? So I think that's pretty much where a lot of his, where a lot of that came from. I got another clip of Dame, though, that I want you to listen to just real quick.
So how much money can you get paid to not, there's no money in this world for someone to pay me so they could call me, so I could call them a boss. That's like calling somebody daddy. How can a man call another man, yo, that's my boss? We don't do that.
I mean, everybody at some point
no,
has to have
don't.
A boss, right?
No, not in Harlem.
Not in Harlem. You know, and that was the thing. I think that was the thing right there that kind of pissed a lot of folks off, was just the fact that, like, even though there are folks who come into being their own boss in different avenues, it was like Dane was just like, nah, fuck that. If you didn't come into this game being a boss, then you ain't a real man. And it kind of threw a lot of folks off. What do you think about that?
Wow. let me see if I'm gonna bite that bait. I understand what Dame is saying. I can't give him 100% of my agreement, but I understand what he's saying. I was talking to a gentleman when I still had a job. I opened my company. I still worked my job for about 2 years after opening up my own company.
Okay.
I worked my job, and I had a conversation with a guy one night, and I told him, this job, I was making more money than I had ever made on another job, but that didn't fill the void for me. You know, we were making significant money. Let's just say we were making $20 an hour, okay? Let's just say that we were making $20 an hour. And I asked him, I said, how would you feel if the owner of this company was standing next to you, and then every hour he handed you $20, right?
Okay.
That started me to thinking about how I wanted control over my destiny. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I've kind of always been like that. Even as a kid, my mother would tell you, you know, I just was that kid. I just didn't want to be told what to do. It didn't mean I wasn't going to do the right thing,
yeah.
You know, but I just didn't want to be told what to do. I obeyed, you know, because she was in charge. But I saw some of the same patterns, you know, when I became a boss, for a better term. Like you say, people just might dislike Dame. I've never had people say anything negative about me until I became a boss.
Right.
You know, and, you know, just general personality is likable. You know, I'm a likable cat. And but, you know, it's that position that people don't like. And mainly because, like you said, most people, whether they voice it or not, they aspire for that position, and everybody can't do it.
Yeah.
You see that in Animal Kingdom, you see that in everything, you know, there's just that one guy who just has it, you know, and when you stick that one guy in the room with a bunch of other than one guys, you're going to always have a, you know, struggle with ego, you know.
Indeed.
Because most of guys like that don't like to submit.
Indeed. And I think that, you know, what gets lost in the sauce for a lot of folks, man, and even those who, you know, who may just ascribe 100% or, you know, subscribe 100% to what Dame Dash was saying. Everybody simply isn't meant to be a boss. You know, there's mm-hmm. a role for everyone that doesn't necessarily include them being in a position of leadership or being in a position of controlling destinies or being in a position of telling folks what to do. Everybody isn't meant to be that. And even folks who are in the position to be a boss find themselves a lot of times humbled by the position, right? They aren't necessarily prepared for everything that comes with it. There's always mm-hmm. something that they didn't necessarily see coming along the way that they didn't prepare for. So mm-hmm. to say that, you know, an honest day's work, which is what a lot of folks do, and I think that's where a lot of people took offense. An honest day's work to feed your family, to take care of your family, and not only that, to take the money that you use to start your own company from someone else, to put mm-hmm. yourself in a position to be a boss. You know, I think that's where mm-hmm. I think that's where a lot of the rhetoric that Dane was spitting was lost in the sauce, so to speak. But one real quick thing though, well, not necessarily quick, but another thing I want to ask you, man, because I know you and your wife have been together since high school. You know, I feel like I was there from the beginning.
Everybody takes credit for it now.
Back
when they were saying, oh, they so stupid, they too young.
Listen.
Then nobody wants to take credit for it. 13 years of marriage, everybody hooked us up.
Listen, far be it from me to take credit for y'all being together. I'm not ever going to say that, player. I'm just saying when it was new, when it was brand new, it was puppy love, and y'all was, you know, on the phone long distance from college and all that other shit. I remember all that stuff, right? That's all I'm saying.
Right.
But one of the things I wanted to ask you, man, was, you know, how important it was for your wife to be involved in the business and like to have that support behind you from her, like how important that was in getting Torres Protection Agency off of the ground.
Oh, wow. Let me answer this question because it is the most important question on the forum. But remind me, I still had something I wanted to add to that that Dame Dash thing that we were talking about earlier.
Okay.
My wife being a part of the business, it's just like everything else. Because we were so young when we started our business and because we were so young when we did everything, the appreciation for what she does and what she did had to grow. You know, because a lot of times, you know, a lot of times people with the alpha male or people with different type personalities, they can easily learn to look over what other people do as insignificant.
Yeah.
And like I said, as I matured, I began to see, you know, how her functioning and helping the business out was everything to me because she compensates for so many things that I'm just not, you know, that I'm not the prototype businessman, you know. But she compensates for that, you know. One of my biggest things, you know, there are times where you have to just assess yourself. And one of my biggest weaknesses is organization. And that just happens to be one of her strengths, you know. So a lot of people don't know that. But my wife actually taught me how to write checks, you know. it wasn't when I started the business. But right. When we got married, you know, I didn't even know how to write the rent checks out, you know.
Yeah.
So my wife actually taught me how to write checks, you know. So I don't really despise the small beginnings, but even up until this point now, you know, there are times where she just has the advice that it takes to get us to the next level. Not to mention, you know, the way she sounds on the phone, like they're constantly clients that just love her. So, you know, they separate her from the company sometimes and say that, you know, one client said, the only reason I'm still dealing with y'all is because of her. So. You know, that can be difficult sometimes if you ego tripping that morning.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know, and that was another thing, man. Because like I said, it was one of those things where I knew you guys were so young, and you guys have been together for so long that I knew, like, she had to be an integral part of that. You know what I mean? Like, you know, and I know like a lot of that motivation is, you know what, because I, you know, this woman is here. You know, so, but you did say you wanted to go back and track back onto something that Dame Dash said.
Yeah, okay, but let me say this before I go do that. Let me say this again.
Okay.
Yes, that is the most intricate part of it is the fact that we were so young and so many things we had to figure out and feel out together. Okay. And there were days where, you know, just like anybody else, I blew it. And one thing I would give to my wife credit is that she always let me keep my manhood. You know, she's never, that's not in her personality, but also in those moments, you know, where we were struggling, you know, I've always been able to keep my manhood both privately and publicly. She's never been difficult to handle because you have pros and cons when you operate a business or when you work together as husband and wife.
Yeah.
You know, because those times when I'm ticked off about something she did at the office, I kind of got to leave that at the door when you come home, you know. And you can have a certain tone with her at the office. You can't talk to her like that at home.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like, you know, give and take a little bit.
Yeah, I wouldn't try to get in y'all business and be like, hey, man, you know, like, yo, you know that shit you did at the office was kind of fucked up, right?
Like, yeah, no, we don't talk to each other like that. But I was, you know, yeah, you know, I can be petty at times because, you know, I like an answer and I want an answer, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So. All right, man. Now, you've worked as a bodyguard before, correct?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Have you worked in executive protection before?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Now, I always like, this is one of the things that I always wondered about being a bodyguard, working in executive protection. I always see the Secret Service guys and all that other stuff. The one thing I always wanted to know about that was like mentally preparing yourself to possibly take a bullet for somebody else. How do you do that?
I would tell you that outside of the Secret Service, who actually train every day to prepare to take bullets, most of the people in the private sector, like on my end, anybody who's not in the Secret Service or military, who hasn't taken that training while in the military or Secret Service or those kind of services, I'll tell you that most people aren't mentally prepared for it. What you have to do is have extensive training. And I think whatever you train yourself to do over and over and over and over again is what you'll do in the heat of battle. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I always talk to people about executive protection, and I tell them, you know, that police officers sometimes are the most difficult people to work with, because in their line of duty, they train to go toward the threat, to take down the threat. Whereas in executive protection, you train to evacuate the threat, to move away. And it takes a strange thing in your brain, I think, to be the guy that when he hears bang, he goes toward it. Your natural inclination is to move away from it.
So
mentally prepared. I think the one thing you have to do is have commitment to the job, you know, commitment to the craft and commitment to the client, you know, because that day may come. I always say that, you know, nothing happens until the day that it happens. So most people haven't experienced being shot on the job, so they can't tell you, you know, what that is. Very, very few people that I know have ever actually had to draw their weapon in the line of duty. But you train extensively that when something happens, you can draw your weapon. Because of that, you know. So I don't know if there's a mentally prepared part. I think it takes extensive training and in a way that you learn to make those things more so reactionary. Because if you get a chance to think about it, me versus somebody else getting shot, that's the thing. I mean, you don't want a bodyguard who's not smart enough to admit that, you know, that that if it's me versus you, I prefer you. It has to be something that through training becomes reactionary.
Okay. All right. Now, you've worked with some pretty reputable folks.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to name drop here at all. But I want to know, like, what was some of the more unusual or unreasonable requests you've gotten from a client while working in, like, a bodyguard capacity?
Oh, wow. I won't say.
You ain't got to say who it was.
I won't say it all. Because if I say what it is, there are a few people in the field who would know who it is.
Seriously?
No, but let's say this.
Okay.
In the bodyguard field, there's always gonna be something that you've never seen before, and there's always gonna be something that you're not prepared for.
Yeah.
Because in that industry you deal with people who need protection. And a lot of times dealing with them is not like dealing with people, you know, at the average nightclub. They're more isolated. There are different things about them, you know, that you have to learn to adjust from. But there are a lot of things that that'll surprise you. Let me say this. My wife said years ago, she started telling people, I don't even ask him when he comes home.
Seriously? Is that bad?
Seriously. I mean, well, you know, I've worked with some interesting people.
Yeah, man. Another question that I had for you, brother, when it came to, like, just say, like, for the regular Joe, personal protection, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you had to give any, if you had any advice for anybody, what would you say would be the most common mistake most people make with their own personal protection?
Lack of awareness. You know, we have these things now that are so distracting, these cell phones, these earbuds, everything that we have is almost like a major distraction. And so people are constantly distracted. Since, you know, people are distracted, they open themselves up for, you know, unfortunate, but they open themselves up to harm. I think one of the biggest things is that people are so easily distracted nowadays because the attention span is so low on people, and criminals know that. So a lot of times I think that's the biggest part of security is first being able to protect yourself. A person that cannot protect themselves can't protect anybody else.
Yeah. You know, that was interesting because I remember we had a police officer come to the job, and he was talking about because we work outside, because a lot of times we're just kind of like consumed by what it is that we're doing as far as work is concerned, the fact that we should be more aware of our surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most common things that they say happens when, like, say, for instance, someone gets robbed or whatever else, is it like the person just popped out of nowhere? Like, mm-hmm. because they didn't see this guy come in any sort of way. And, you know, it was another thing, too, he said. He said something about, like, when you go to an ATM, a lot of times they can tell how much money you're getting out of the ATM by the phumps. Because the ATM would throw out the bills and they go, boom, 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 boom. They all usually are 20s. So if you get, like, so if you get five phumps, that person know you didn't got $100 about it at ATM. So he was really just telling us, you know, the same thing you said pretty much about having an awareness of your surroundings, man, and paying attention to people around you. I know one of the biggest things that I do while I'm out at work, and if I see a guy, even if it's just like he's sitting on his porch or just what, I make sure I acknowledge that dude. Like, hey, how you doing, mm-hmm. man?
Exactly, right.
Yeah, just to let him know that I see him. And I mm-hmm. think a lot of times it kind of mitigates a situation, or even if he thought he might have wanted to do something, I'm aware that he's there and he might not try it. Not mm-hmm. even not in that moment, but who's to say he will? You know, you don't know if he's going to try it anyway, but it's good to know that you do have some sort of awareness to be kind of prepared if and when it does go down.
Mm-hmm. That's the key thing. I'm constantly talking to my daughter, constantly talking to my wife about just being aware, because so many times I see it with women, you know, on these phones, got these phones up to their ear and different things like that, you know, eating and different things. They're just not aware of what's happening, especially in parking lots and different things like that. They open themselves up to grave danger, just not being aware. You know, you ought to select the times when you're going to talk on your phone or when you're going to text and different things like that. But it definitely shouldn't be while you're walking to your car. You know, different things like that people need to pick up on. And another thing, too, is that, you know, everybody should have some level of self-defense training. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things, a buddy of mine, he teaches a self-defense course. One thing he pointed out to me, and I started to use it in my everyday life, is the fact that most people aren't prepared for violence. You know, most people that you know haven't had a bunch of fist fights.
Yeah.
So when violence happens and it happens quickly, they're caught off guard. You know what I mean? And that's something that I think people should always think about, is that at some level, even if it's at a basic level, I need some level of self-defense training.
Indeed, man. You know what? I appreciate you coming on here, brother. Like I said, I've been really trying to get you to come on here for the longest time, man. But before you get out of here, let these people know how they can get in touch with you at Tourist Protection Agency if they should ever need the services of Tourist Protection mm-hmm. Agency, man. Let them know what your contact information is.
Well, we're on the web. Website is www.touristprotection.com. You can email us at services@touristprotection.com. We're located in Atlanta, Georgia. Our headquarters office is actually right outside of Atlanta now. It's in Jonesboro, Georgia. Our number is 770-960-6077. If you need to get in contact with us, you can use any of those points of contact, and maybe we can help you out.
Indeed. And of course, I will have all of that information available in the show notes for this episode. But what you trying to tell me there, bro?
Go ahead.
No, I was saying, what were you trying to say? You were saying something. You were trying to signal me something.
I was saying I never got an opportunity to go back on that damn dad.
Oh, shit. My bad, bro. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I was saying that those different mentalities show up, too, with people who disagree, is that a lot of times when they've never been in that position,
yeah,
they don't hear clearly what he's saying. And there's somebody out there who's hungry to become a boss, and he's taking that same thing that offended one person,
yeah,
he's taking that as fuel to get him out of his current situation. And I think that's more so along the lines of who he's talking to. He's talking to the people who desire to be a boss and who want to take that approach toward life. And he's saying, hey, look, hurry up and get out of your situation. Stop degrading yourself. And I don't think that he meant that in a degrading way, because even he has employees who have to have his best interests at heart. You know, so I don't think that he meant that employees are worth nothing, or, you know, that if you're an employee, you're nothing. I think that what he's saying is that if you're somebody who aspires to be a boss and you're an employee, you know, it's a degradation of yourself. It's kind of hard to explain until it happens to you. That's one of the things I've had to learn over the last 10 years, is the fact that, you know, sometimes you can't see it until you're in it, and when you're in it, then you get it, and that's what grows us up and makes us more mature.
Indeed, man, indeed. And you know what? Like I said, I think to a certain degree, like I said with Dame, I think a lot of what he said had some truth in it. It's just so hard to get past for a lot of people the delivery. So when the delivery is kind of janky, you know, even if you are speaking to that most hungry person, so many people who could have really used that message miss it because of the fact that you didn't necessarily put it in a position, or you didn't put it in a way that they can take heed to it. And I think that's mm-hmm. where a lot of the confusion came from.
But yeah.
But again, bro, like I said, I really do appreciate you coming on, man, and letting folks know how you got started, man, and what are you know, and what you're doing. Because I think a lot of folks need to see, you know, folks close to them doing things on the level that you guys are doing down there in Atlanta, man. And I couldn't be proud of both you and your wife, man. Real talk.
No, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Indeed, man. So I'll talk to you soon, brother.
All right, soon. Talk to you later, brother. Hey, man, one day you got to get me on here to talk about some of your more controversial topics.
Hey.
I'll probably end up just being totally quiet by the time you finish. But I do want to at least listen in.
Hey, you can listen in, brother. You can listen in. Go to YouTube right now, man. I'm still going on. All right now, bro.
Thank you. Talk to you later. Bye.
One. All right, man. That was my boy, Taurus, of the Taurus Protection Agency, man. We go way back, man, all the way to high school, man. And it was really important for me to have that guy on simply because I know people, you know, like I know business owners who can brag all day long about their accomplishments and what it is that they're doing business-wise, but they don't necessarily have the attitude and the ego that Dame Dash had. Now, again, like I said, when it came to Dame Dash, I think a lot of what he was talking about was lost in the sauce because of the delivery. But at the same time, Dame Dash did have some things of note to say in that interview. But it was so much that was going on with that. It was just kind of like, ain't nobody really paying attention to you like that, dude. Really. Yeah, man. But, it's been a lot of stuff going on, man. It's been a lot of stuff going on racially. And your man Span tired. I'm a little tired of even having to get on the mic and yet another thing didn't happen involving white folks acting up. Right? White people behaving badly, man. We've had the SAE shit go on. We've had a black man find himself hung in Mississippi. We've had a black man be beaten up in Inkster, Michigan. We've had so many different stories, man, within the last 6 months that just kind of like make you weary. When you think about the Mike Brown verdict, you think about George Zimmerman running his mouth again. And I'm going to talk a little bit about all of these things, man, because I want to say pretty much that, yo, racism, I kind of wish it would just take a motherfucking vacation. I really do. I wish it would take a vacation, man. Real talk. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, too, was there was a story, of course. There was a story that came out of Inkster, Michigan, right? A 57-year-old man, I don't have his name off the top of my head right now, was beaten by the Inkster police. They claimed that he ran a stoplight. He didn't make a stop, but he didn't, not a stoplight, I'm sorry, a stop sign. He ran a stop sign. He didn't make the proper stop. He made a rolling stop at a stop sign. They followed him. And then they, you know, the police claimed that he was trying to elude them, that he was, you know, leading them on a chase. When, if you look at the dashboard cam, that there was no chase at all, really. He basically kept his entire, you know, his regular speed. He wasn't trying to elude them at all. And then when they pulled him out of his car, one of the officers started beating him in his head. He took 16 punches to the head. He was tasered 3 times. It's like 6 cops were there. I think they said recently that a few of those cops that were out there, as a matter of fact, one of the cop that pulled him out of his car was an auxiliary police officer, and he didn't have all of the powers of a regular police officer, so he shouldn't have even been out of the car. So much shit going wrong with this story, right? So much going wrong with this story. And it gets to a point where these things are happening so much, so often. Like, it's happening so much to where, like, anytime someone says to a black person that, you know what, if you just obey the law, then these things wouldn't be happening to you, you kind of look at them like, man, are you out of your fucking mind? Right? Like, how often does this have to happen for you to, you know, for something to click in that head that these behaviors, these attitudes towards black men aren't necessarily a normal thing, and that black men are disproportionately locked up? Because, you know, a lot of times you'll see folks talk about the disproportionate number of black men in jail, like, you know, and they take that as you'll take prison numbers and say, well, this is why we police your areas like this, is because there's so many of you guys doing everything wrong. And it's like, well, wait a minute, is it actually you guys are putting us here because you think we're doing these things and we aren't, and that's why our numbers are so high in the prison system? You know, so you look at this thing, you look at what happened with and I hate that I don't have his name right now. I could look it up right now. Let me go ahead and look it up. I can do that. Let's see. Let's find out what this gentleman's name is. And I'm sorry for the typing. I type really fucking heavy. But wait, that isn't it. Floyd Dent. Floyd Dent is this man's name. Floyd Dent was a man that was beaten by the Inkster Police Department. And you think about what happened there, and you think about what happened with Tamir Rice, and you think about what happened with Eric Garner, and you think about what happened to, I don't know if any of you guys are familiar with the story of Malice Green, you think about what happened to Oscar Grant, you think about what happened to Rodney King. Like, it's a sad state of affairs when I could just rattle off names like that of people who have been beaten and or killed by the police so casually. It's a sad state of affairs that I can just rattle off those names in that way. It shouldn't be that easy for anyone to do that, right? So it gets to a point where, like, you wonder, when is it going to click for folks, or when is it going to click for those in law enforcement, right? That these types of actions aren't necessary, that these types of actions are hyper, being hyper aggressive with black males in these instances isn't necessary, right? I'll tell you guys, anytime I get pulled over by the police, your man span is scared, right? Your man span, I'm nervous all the time, right? Take, for instance, like a couple weeks ago, I'm going to pick my daughter up, right? And I'm riding on Warren Road, and I see a police car rolling past me. I'm headed eastbound, he's going westbound, he rolls past me, and instinctively, I always look in my rear view anytime I see the police. Instinctively, it always happens. Like, I always look in my rear view, and sure enough, he rolls past me and bust a U-turn, right? Just bust a hard U-turn to come back to where I am, right? So he's speeding up trying to catch up to me. Now, mind you, I'm not speeding, I'm just driving, but he's speeding up trying to get up to me, and he finally flicks the lights on, he pulls me over, and I know it's not because I was speeding, I know it's not because I didn't have on a seatbelt. So what I did was, I rolled my windows down, and I stuck my hands out of the window, and I told this dude, I'm a licensed pistol carrier, my weapon is in the car with me, right? Y'all know what this motherfucker pulled me over for? Tinted windows. That's what he did. That's what he busted a U-turn for, to cite me for tinted windows, right? But it was like, dude, that, seriously, this is what you're doing? This is what you're doing? Like, you don't have shit else better to do but to, like, to kind of fuck with me about these tinted windows on my car? You know, and he was talking about how it was a safety hazard for police officers. They can't see what's going on in the car. It's like, well, I'm looking at it like, it's none of your business what's going on in my car. I'm not doing anything. I'm just minding my business on my way to go pick up my daughter, right? But I'm not going to argue with this dude, right? Give me the ticket. Okay, I'll take this ticket. Give me the ticket. Never try to get into a confrontation with the police, right? Now, that's not to say that, you know, even in that interaction, that it couldn't have gone left. You know, they know when they pull me over that I have a gun or I'm licensed to carry a gun, because that information is there when they run my plates, right? But he could have been very hyperactive in his interaction with me. You know, if I have to reach for my wallet and my gun is in the car, and he says, oh, he's reached for his gun. That can very well happen, and I'm very nervous about that each and every time I get pulled over by the police. And I've gotten pulled over by the police quite a bit lately, right? So to see a story like, you know, what happened to this man, it scares me. I think any black man worth his worth his word is scared anytime the police pull them over for any reason, because you don't know what that dude's mindset is like when he's pulling you over. And to see that they had they tased this man 3 times, that they punched this man in his head 16 times. All of these things, man, are worrisome, and it doesn't make any fucking sense. And if they do come back where, you know, these officers get a slap on the wrist, they only get, desk duty, they don't put them back on the street. No, fire their asses and make sure that they know that this type of action isn't tolerated. But because we've had, you know, like I said, what happened with Oscar Grant, that officer got out in 2 years for killing Oscar Grant. The officer that killed Eric Garner isn't going to jail at all, right? You know, the officer that killed Tamir Rice, within 2 seconds of getting out of his car, shot that boy down. We haven't determined what's going to happen to him yet. But these instances are happening so frequently now. So frequently. Or better yet, I will say this. We don't know if they were happening so frequently. I think it's because we have so much more surveillance now. You know what I mean? Like, there are cameras everywhere. Everybody can see everything. We have social media, so the word spreads around quicker. It's probably going on. Well, yeah, it was going on a whole hell of a lot more than what we know. You know, one of the things about what happened with Rodney King was the fact that Rodney King, yeah, that was the first time anybody had seen it videotaped. It was going on. It was just the first time anybody had seen that shit, and it was able to be spread out to the masses, and everybody could figure out, like, yo, the police out there in California be fucking niggas up. Right? So, you know, just that alone, man, it is weary. It makes a brother weary just having to think about, yeah, okay, here we go, yet another instance of the police fucking up, right? And you still have an element of the population that'll say, well, he brought it upon himself. All he had to do was just pull over. It's always his fault. It's always the victim's fault. We always find a way to victimize or to blame the victim in whatever instance, whether that be a black man being beaten by the police or whether or not a woman is being raped. Some kind of way we find a way to blame the victim, and it's getting fucking tiresome, right? So there's that. Then we have another story about black man being hung in Mississippi, right? And the thing that's scary about that is how quickly the story of him being a convict, right? I almost knew about him being a convict the minute that they said he was hanged, right? That he had been released. He was on parole, or he'd just been released from prison because he'd murdered a woman in 1980. I believe it was 1980. And, they made sure to let us know it was a white woman that he had murdered in 1980 and that he had just gotten out, right? And it was interesting how that story went from, okay, not only is he a convict, but you know what? He might have did this to himself. This is a suicide. We have to take into account this may have been a suicide. And I know, like, when you think about the story of, you know, it's a black man, it's Mississippi, it was a hanging. You know, I know a lot of us can leap to the conclusion. A lot of us can leap to that conclusion that this man was lynched. And I know for a lot of the folks in the media, I don't think they really wanted to push that narrative so much. But at the same time, again, it was one of those things where they found a narrative to run with. And it was, you know what? He was a criminal. He was having trouble with life on the outside. Maybe he decided, you know what, I can't handle this, and took himself out, right? But we went to that story so fast. Let's make this leap. Let's not make the leap of him being lynched. Let's make the leap of him killing himself, right? So considering everything that's going on, with all of the racial tension that's been going, that has been building up, all of the racial crimes that have been going on, where black folks have gotten pretty much no justice at all, it's like one of those, like another check mark, like boom, okay, now we able to lynch a motherfucker and get away with it. We'll make it seem like he did it to himself. You know, he did murder that white woman back in 1980. Let's not forget that. It's one of those things, man. It's like, it's yet another instance where you're like, fuck, man, seriously, for real? Like, another thing didn't happen? Another thing didn't happen? So, I'm weary about a lot of this shit, right? And let's see, it was another story about George Zimmerman, right? George Zimmerman has been speaking up lately. And I don't know why this dude can't just seem to shut the fuck up. He got away with murder. Be happy that you got away with murder. Go the fuck on somewhere. Like, go sit down somewhere. Like, every time you look up, like, George Zimmerman is getting into some shit. George Zimmerman has been arrested like 6 times since he killed Trayvon Martin. 6 times. At least. Domestic violence, you know, terroristic threats, all sorts of shit. And so, for whatever reason, George Zimmerman does an interview or he makes a statement and he has this to say.
Right now, the way things turned out, I'm satisfied. With the news of the Department of Justice definitively concluding that there is no charge to be levied against me, I feel like the Department of Justice process worked.
George, how about the actual event itself? Do you wish it had turned out different?
I answered that question in my initial interview with Sean Hannity, and on different perspectives, me as a Christian, I believe that God does everything for a purpose, and he had his plans, and for me to second guess them would be hypocritical, almost blasphemous. However, as an individual, I've done a lot of soul searching, and the conclusion that many professionals and have conveyed to me and I've come to adopt is that only in a true life or death scenario can you have mental clearness to know that you cannot feel guilty for surviving. Had I have had a fraction of a thought that I could have done something differently, acted differently, so that both of us would have survived, then I would have a heavier weight on my shoulders, that sense in the back of my mind. But in all fairness, you cannot, as a human, feel guilty for living, for surviving.
All right, 2 things. One, you didn't have to pursue the dude, right? We could talk about whether or not... we can't talk about whether or not... You didn't have to do anything in that particular instance but follow directions. Call the police. You didn't have to get out of your car. None of that. So to say that, you know, to absolve yourself of the decisions that you made, because that's pretty much what you're doing. You're absolving yourself of the decisions that you made to say that was God's will that you get out of your fucking car and shoot this kid down because you got into a fight with him and you couldn't handle the fight that you got yourself into. No, that was God's will, you know, God's will that you get out of your car, shoot a kid down after he's getting the better of you in a fight that you initiated. That's God's will. Again, you know, here's the thing too about George Zimmerman. Again, I think that at least the motherfucker's consistent, because this isn't the first time that George Zimmerman has said this kind of shit. I remember he said the exact same thing to Sean Hannity a couple years ago. You know, Sean Hannity interviewed this dude and he talked about it being God's will. I don't know why he's coming out saying this again. I don't even really understand why there was even a need for him to do any interviews at this particular juncture. Like, dude, go hide somewhere. Go live somewhere. Try to get forgotten. Try to be forgotten. Like, I don't get this need to, I don't know, this need to be in the spotlight, so to speak. I think he's searching for some sort of spotlight, and just thinking that whatever it was he did was right. Right? I mean, how you have to disassociate yourself so far from what it is that you've done that you would say that God willed it to be done. And that absolves you for all of the things that you know, all of the decisions that you made that led up to that point. You don't have to take responsibility for those anymore. That's your way of coping. That's your way of telling folks that, you know what, I didn't do anything wrong, man. You know, that was God's plan. But in that same interview, to say that, well, you know what, the justice system worked and everything else. Yeah, it worked because it worked out in your favor. And he also admitted that if it hadn't worked out in his favor, that he thought it wouldn't be incorrect. And there was a lot of things he said in that interview, too, about Barack Obama and how Barack Obama tried to, I guess, sabotage him and everything else. I didn't want to play that whole thing. I'm pissed off already just listening to what I listened to. But all of this is about blaming everybody else for the decisions that you made and the actions that you took on that night. So, again, it's like fucking with black people weak. Fucking with black. 2015 has just been fucking with black people all year, man. Real talk. Real talk. We've been getting fucked with all year long, man. It's been thing after thing after thing come down. 2014, 2015 is like an NBA season of fucking with black people. All right. Just over the wintertime into the summertime, we're going to continue to fuck with y'all. We're going to continue to make shit bad for y'all. We're going to continue to shoot y'all down with impunity. We're going to continue to make excuses as to why these things happening to you and your people, right? So, yeah, man, I mean, I hate to be so pessimistic on this show, but yeah, it just seems like so many different things are happening that don't necessarily have to, but they keep happening regardless, right? So, another thing too, right? SAE, there was a SAE, the kid that was a part of that whole chant, one of the guys that actually led the chant, did some sort of apology with a gang of black clergy behind him, man. I'm not going to even try to play that clip. I don't care. Like it's almost par for the course, man. There will always be some gang of black folks to, I wouldn't say co-sign, but there are always some who are there to kind of accept the apologies, no matter how disingenuous they are, right? There's always that group. No matter how disingenuous the apology is, there's always going to be, well, you know what, we forgive you. Like, come on, man, I'm not buying this kid's this kid's apology. He's not apologizing. I mean, he's not sorry for anything he did. He's sorry he got caught. He's trying to legislate whether or not you could say nigga now, because he didn't got caught saying nigga in a position where it's made things bad for him. But yeah, man, like that happened. That happened. But yeah. it's been a long couple weeks, you know, where all of these things are just kind of like coming up to a head with me, where I'm just tired of all of these things. Man, like Raven Simone gets on TV and she says some dumb shit about Mrs. Obama, you know, defending Telemundo TV host that compared Michelle Obama to Planet of the Apes. Then she goes back on TV and she sticks her foot in her mouth about being from the continents or all the continents of Africa and all the continents of Europe. I know she misspoke, but goddamn, come on, man. You're in public life. You got to do better. You got to do better, man. But yeah, man, you know what? I'm coming up to the listener feedback portion of the show. It's been a minute since I've had some listener feedback in this amount. So I'm going to go ahead and get into the listener feedback now. And the first thing I wanted to get to were the emails. And first email I got was from Reggie. And Reggie writes in to say, What's going on, Mr. Span? This is Reggie. I've been writing the show for the last few weeks only to listen again and realize that you had a totally new email for the show. I thought you had been dissing me. My bad, man. All right. Anyway, I know you're into the phone game real heavy, and I was wondering what you thought about all of these smartwatches, more specifically the Apple Watch. Do you think they will ever take off, or are they just gimmicks? I'm slightly interested, but $350 is a lot of money to shell out for a glorified notification device. What do you think? Well, I've bought into the gimmick. If you feel like it's a gimmick, I've kind of bought into it. I have a Moto 360. I got two Moto 360s, and I got a Pebble watch. You don't have to start off at $350 to get a smartwatch. You can start off with a Pebble watch. The Pebble watch is like $100. You may even be able to catch it on sale for like $79 for the original Pebble. I don't know if they're going to take off. I think they're a very niche product, right? I think there's a niche that's there. I don't necessarily know if it'll reach mass appeal in the same way that like the iPhone or Android smartphones will ever be. I don't think anyone, for one, you have a lot of folks who don't like wearing watches now. Like it's not a thing for a lot of people to wear watches anymore, right? I like wearing watches. I wear watches all the time. I feel naked without one. With the Pebble watch, you know, it's compatible with both Android and iPhone. So you can use it on both of those platforms. And there's a lot of different applications on that watch to make that watch more functional than just having notifications, right? So you can have a pedometer on there. You can have I don't think you can have a heart monitor on there. I don't think it has that capability, but you can get your scores, and you can send text messages through the watch without ever having to take your phone out of your pocket. I think that's one of the things that drew me into even the idea of having a smartwatch was the fact that I work in construction, in a construction like field. I'm working with I'm operating heavy machinery a lot. So I get a lot of notifications. So if I get like a text message and I'm working on a machine and my phone's ringing, it's kind of nice to just at a glance look at my watch really quick to decide whether or not this is worth me even pulling my phone not to respond or anything else. And if it's a text message, I can actually just talk into the watch. It'll dictate what I say and it'll send that text message out without me ever having to take the phone out of my pocket. But I'm usually on the bleeding edge of that kind of shit. I like being on the bleeding edge of the technology game like that. It may not be good for everybody. Everybody's not going to see a use for that, you know? So as far as them actually taking off, so to speak, I'm not sure it'll ever actually get to a point where it'll reach total mass appeal. But I do think that there really is a niche market for them, and there will be people that will buy it. Now, as far as the Apple Watch is concerned, it's pretty much the same thing for Apple. I think the only contention that I had with the Apple Watch was the disparity in the prices of the watch, considering the fact that you don't get a whole hell of a lot more with the more money you spend, right? So if the Apple Watch, the base model was like $350, and then you have another Apple Watch that's $17,000 or can run up to upwards to $17,000. I think that $17,000 Apple Watch better be doing some damn amazing things to justify that cost, right? And I've seen and I've heard people compare it to like cars. You know, like I've heard someone say that, like, you know what, like say Toyota makes a $10,000 car, and then they make like a $50,000, like the luxury models, right? But when you get a car and you get like a $10,000 car, you get the vinyl seats, you get the AM/FM radio. You don't get the power windows and door locks. You don't get any of those extras, right? But when you get that Lexus, you get the leather seats. You get the Bluetooth in the car. You get the satellite radio. You get the power windows and door locks. You get the moonroof. You get all of that stuff to justify it costing that $50,000. With that Apple Watch Edition, you're not getting anything extra. You're not getting a better screen. You're not getting better memory. You're not getting any of those. You're not getting anything that actually helps that watch function better than the $350 version. So, you know, to each his own. I know Apple a lot of times is a status symbol for a lot of folks. But yeah, man, I mean, if you want to get into smartwatches, man, just understand what it is. Try to understand what it is you want the watch for. I use it simply because it makes things a lot easier for me, not necessarily having to pull my phone out all the time. And in the line of work that I'm in, having your phone out all the time is kind of frowned upon. So for me to be able to just kind of look at my wrist and get some information really quick without having to pull my phone out, it works for me. So, yeah, man, I appreciate you writing in, Reggie. And the second email I got is from Reggie again. let's see. He says, "Oh, damn, I knew I was forgetting something. Have you seen that video of the white cat carrying a rifle out in the open around that school in Michigan? I know those are your stomping grounds. That's how y'all get down up there. How come y'all didn't ask that dude? How come they didn't ask that dude for a permit or nothing? Shit is scary, man. Now I can see why you're so vigilant about guns. Hell, they're all over the place. Be safe." Yeah, I've seen the video. Here's the thing, though. Here in Michigan, you don't need a license to carry a gun openly, right? You don't need you can open carry in Michigan without a license. As a matter of fact, if you're going to carry a gun in Michigan and you don't have a permit, the only way you can carry that gun is to carry that gun out in the open, right? So that's part of the reason why the police didn't ask that man for a permit, simply because he was open carrying the gun. And in Michigan, you don't need a permit to open carry. One of the things that caught my eye was simply the fact that how aggressive he was with the police, in that he was so aggressive with them. Like he actually opened the conversation with them. Like he came to them with a confrontation and then acted as if, you know, his rights were being infringed upon. I couldn't imagine, even as someone who advocates for, you know, a Second Amendment proponent, even though I'm a Second Amendment proponent, I think dude was just looking for a fucking confrontation, and it was irresponsible, and it wasn't educational at all. It's just some dude making a political point for his own, you know, for his own gain or whatever. Because I didn't see anything that anybody gained out of that. All he did was scare the fuck out of a whole shit ton of people. He tied up police services because they're investigating what's going on with this dude that's walking around town with an AR-15 or whatever rifle he had around his back and his pistol. You know, it just draws too much attention. And as much as a Second Amendment proponent as I am, I can't necessarily say that I'm so much on the side of this open carry shit, only because they seem to just want confrontation. They seem to want confrontation all the time. It's like, dude, okay, we know you got a gun. All right, congratulations, motherfucker, you got a gun. All right, keep it moving. But they want to videotape all the time. Like they it's like they draw these, they go into these places knowing that they're going to get, knowing that folks are going to be made uneasy about their presence there. And they know that somebody's going to call the police. They know they're going to have this interaction. And then they know they're going to videotape this, so they know that they could put this shit on YouTube. And it gets to a point where it's like, all right, dude, like, it ain't even so much about your rights right now. It's about you kind of wanting attention. And I know there are going to be some people who may even listen to this podcast right now and say, well, you're wrong about that and everything else. And y'all more than welcome to disagree with me. Y'all can write into the show and let me know how wrong I am. But at the same time, I kind of feel like, yo, you know, these open carry dudes, man, y'all kind of make it hard for everybody else who really just want to, you know, exercise their rights and not pretty much bother anybody. And I think you're bothering a whole hell of a lot of people just, you know, walking around schools with a fucking, you know, rifle and a pistol on you, you know, and like, it's really not necessary. If you want to, you know, like I said, if you don't need a license to carry out in the open, but, make the effort to get you a concealed carry license and carry your gun, you know, exercise your right and leave folks alone. Stop tying up the motherfucking police with this bullshit, really. Because that's what I'm kind of getting to the point, even though, like, I remember when I first got into guns, man, I'm like, yeah. But the more and more I see of these dudes, man, it's like, man, some of y'all motherfuckers just done lost it. Y'all looking for some damn attention that really shouldn't even be wanted. So, yeah, man, that dude was crazy. And another thing, too, had that been me, had that been a black dude, that conversation wouldn't have lasted that long. I'm going to just put that out there. That conversation lasted as long as it did, only because of who he was, and that was because he was a white dude. And again, somebody may take offense to me saying that, but had that been me or somebody who looked like me, that conversation would not have lasted that long. We saw what happened with Tamir Rice, and he had a toy gun, and he was a child. So, Yeah, man. But I appreciate you writing in, Reggie. I really do. Hope to hear from you again soon, brother. Real talk. The next email I got was from April. And April writes in to say, "Hello, Mr. Span. I'm April, and I'm new to your show. I found you on YouTube, and I like your vibe. I get the sense that you're open to other ideas and not so much just dictating your thoughts to your listeners. One of the things that really caught my attention about you was your admission that you once held unfavorable views about homosexuality and that you now reject those views. I was wondering if you were familiar with Dr. Umar Johnson and his contention that most gay people are either mentally ill or victims of sexual abuse as children. I would love to know your thoughts on this, as I'm sure you probably have an interesting perspective. Thank you for your consideration." All right. Thanks for writing in, April. I am familiar with Dr. Umar Johnson. I've seen a few of his videos on YouTube. I am aware that Dr. Umar Johnson appears in the Hidden Colors series of films. And I did see that video where he was having a discussion. I think it was a sister that challenged him on some of his views, and I think it was on Boyce Watkins' channels on YouTube, where they said he schooled this woman, right? And so I'm looking at the video, and one of the first things, here's the thing with folks like Umar Johnson, or like folks. One of the things that I thought about that video where he was addressing his sister, and he talked about homosexuality being of a psychological thing or the people were victims of sexual abuse. One of the things that comes to mind is, one, when you can dismiss someone as being crazy or a victim, like, you don't necessarily have to take anything that they say seriously, right? So on the surface, it doesn't look like he's saying anything offensive. But at the same time, he's saying you're either crazy or you've been fucked with. And that's why you are the way that you are. It's a subtle way of dismissing what somebody is going through or how they came to be who they are, right? Another thing that I thought was interesting was that he kept holding up this book as it was, I forget exactly what the book was, but he kept holding up that book as an authority on what homosexuality was, as far as it being a psychological malady, right? And that it had been, homosexuality had been removed from that book in like 1970, 73 or something like that. And that he began to talk about the politics of why it was removed and all these things, right? And I got to wondering, like, well, I wonder if that same series of books that you're holding up right now, I wonder if that's, you know, that whether or not you hold this book up, and would you agree when that same book would have said that black people were mentally inferior and psychologically inept and compared to white folks, right? Because we do know that for a long time, it was scientific that black people were supposedly inferior to white people. And it was written down in a book, and someone said it was scientific, and it was in a book, so you can go back and you're like, okay, yeah, it's in the book and it's scientific, so yeah, I got it, right? And so, like, it was one of those things where I think when it comes to people like Umar Johnson and people who listen to Umar Johnson, here's the thing. People will agree with Dr. Umar Johnson simply because he already, he confirms what they believe, right? So here you have a doctor. Here's a doctor who's gone to school and studied and had all these, he's got all these credentials, and he's saying that everything that I believe is correct. So I'm gonna ride with that because that's what this man says, and he has the credentials and he knows what he's talking about. Cause I'm a ride with that, right? And it's interesting how we pick and choose that, right? Because then, like, I could take someone, say, for instance, like a Dr. Ben Carson. Dr. Ben Carson is an amazing neuroscientist or neurosurgeon. I'm sorry. Amazing. They wrote a book about him, Gifted Hands. We had to read about him when we were kids. Dr. Ben Carson been saying some outlandish shit the last few weeks, last few months, last few years, right? And these same people that would hold up Dr. Umar Johnson because he's confirming what they believe, you ask them same motherfuckers what they think of Dr. Ben Carson to see what they tell you. Like, this nigga off his rocker, right? So it gets to a point where, like, I'm always of the belief of just because there's someone who's a, you know, there's a doctor, there's someone who's speaking and there's a doctor in front of their name, to not just take everything that they say and run with it, to do my own research, to, you know, to kind of gather my own ideas about it. And that's not to say that you do that all the time. Like, you want to go to somewhere that's reputable, right? And Dr. Umar Johnson has made his views on homosexuality known for quite some time, was that that was something that he didn't agree with, that he thought it was psychologically, that it was a psychological malady, or that these people had, they're that way because they've been fucked with when they were kids. So just knowing that about Dr. Umar Johnson, like when I watched that video and I saw, you know, so many people just kind of gloss over the fact that, yo, he's holding up that book and he's talking about, yo, I got this because of this book and, like, the people that I've been around, the people that I've studied. Knowing that there are different processes in actually doing research in that field, man, and for him to go up there with some anecdotal statements and that book and use that as his crutch as to why he believed homosexuality was because of psychological malady or sexual molestation, man. Yeah, it was crazy. I don't agree with him. Long story short, I don't agree with him, but I do really appreciate you writing in, April, and letting your voice be heard here at the Spam Report. Write again. I'd love to hear from you again. I got a couple YouTube comments. I got one here from Max Peterson. He says, I tried out Trivia Crack on Facebook and I didn't care for it. Trivia Door is more my speed. You know what? I was supposed to talk about Trivia Crack the last time I was on the Spam Report. I was whooping ass on Trivia Crack. That was the thing, right? I was like kicking people's ass. Like, I was like 46 and like 6 at one point. And then it was like, I got to pull her up. Because I don't want to do this sister no injustice. She was whooping my ass. I finally, like, somebody had finally, like, started kicking my ass on a consistent basis. I think out of 8 games we played, she beat me, like, in 6 of those 8 games. Like, I won the first 2, and then she ran them off. And it was like, all right, I don't think I want to play this game no more. So I ain't been playing Trivia Crack the last couple weeks, man. But I was whooping ass, man. And that was a thing. But I never played the Trivia Door, man. Maybe I might check that out. Also, Max said that the idea that blacks are mentally inferior is one of the strongest memes among the new generation of racists. We're not racist because science. Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of goes back into what I was saying about, you know, like a lot of these police beatings, man, where, like, you know, they, as if black people are causing the mistreatment that they, that we've gone under. Like, it's our fault no matter what. And that's why I reject these rejectability politics too. Respectability politics. That's why I reject the notion that black people are the cause of their own misery, right? Like, that's pretty much where it comes to. That's what it boils down to for me, that if only black people acted a certain way, if only black people did a certain thing, all of a sudden white people gonna magically start acting right. Nah, that's not what it is. No matter what it is that you do, white folks are going to find an issue with you. Some, not all, some. Because not all of them are racist and not all of them are out here doing fucked up shit. But for whatever reason, no matter what, there will be a segment of the population, a segment of the white population that just don't fuck with you. And they're going to make sure that they know that, you know, they don't fuck with you. All right. But thank you for writing in, Max. Another person who's at why_not_now writes in to say, I enjoyed your show. Subscribe. Appreciate it. Mika B is an idiot, the quintessential white girl damsel in distress. I can't stand her, and MSC has never been liberal. Well, that's where we disagree. I think MSC is so far left that, like, a lot of it kind of gets lost in the sauce. Like, a lot of any legitimate points that they would make gets lost in the sauce, the same way that Fox is so far right now. You know, they're like, they're so one so far right, one so far left. Only the difference is MSNBC ain't being watched by a whole hell of a lot of people. Fox is dominating cable news. And even with cable news, here's another thing too. A lot of people aren't watching cable news. Like, even as much as Fox News touts themselves as being the number one cable news station, out of all of the people that have cable, they're not really getting a whole hell of a lot of views. So in that segment, they may be number one, but it's a small number one, right? So, yeah, MSNBC, they've had a liberal slant for quite some time. It wasn't always that way, but they did start skewing that way once they saw that Fox was doing it the opposite way and they were starting to get traction and everything else. I used to be an avid MSNBC watcher. I can't really watch it much anymore. I can't. I just can't. I can't at all. But, yeah, they said, To go back to what you were saying, they said, they throw a few liberal commentators in the afternoon and evening, but the network is not liberal, not in the least. And speaking of post-racial America, we are seeing the surfacing of all these blatant displays of racism precisely because we have a black president. It's backlash against President Obama. The racism was always there. His election and re-election brought it to the surface. So I really hate this respectability politics nonsense. Yeah, I can agree with you there. I think a lot of the disrespect that President Obama has endured is simply because of, you know, a lot of people resent the fact that he is a black man and the fact that he is articulate and he is smart and he is a dynamic human being. And it goes against everything that they've been thought or taught to believe about black people. Right. So I think there's a lot of that there, a lot of resentment there that, like, how, you know, that's where you get this, well, he can't be one of those, like, Negroes. Like, he's not even from here. You know, he's Muslim. You know, they want to make him so much of an other. He can't just be who he is. He has to be something more. He has to be something else than what he's shown everybody to be. And you think about it, man, the man has been vetted. If there was really anything for real to be found on President Obama, we'd have known by now. We would have known about it by now. Even if he was Muslim, right? Because that's one of the contentions that a lot of people have, that he might have been Muslim or whatever. Even if he was Muslim, that's not against the law for him to be Muslim, right? So yeah, I think a lot of the contentions that folks have about President Obama may be seeping itself into, like, everyday society, where the police, you know, are feeling a little froggy, you know, maybe putting black people in their place. I don't know. I don't want to project. But I think a lot of a lot of folks just simply don't like the fact that the president is a black man and he's unapologetically black, with a black wife and two beautiful black daughters, right? So yeah, I really do appreciate you writing in. Why not underscore now? I hope to see you again soon in the feedback portion of the show. And lastly, I have the Stitcher reviews. I got a few Stitcher reviews, and Stitcher, I don't know, man. Like, I didn't even know I had reviews. I really have to, like, be more vigilant about the reviews that I get on Stitcher, because I didn't even know I had any. I had to keep going back through there, and I have some finally pop up, and I'm looking at them, and these, like, are from a few months ago. But the first review is from Shlani. Says, awesome show. It's a 5-star review. Says, I love this show because I live in the Metro Detroit area and I get a different perspective on the issues in the city. Keep up the good work. And of course, I will try to do that for you, Slotty. Appreciate you writing in, and I appreciate the 5-star review. Also, Mr. Chameleon 101 leaves a 5-star review. Calls the show excellent. Says, amazing show. Pulls no punches. Brother Span teaches me something with every new episode. I appreciate that, Mr. Chameleon. Real talk. And yeah, I try not to pull punches. I try not to. But yeah, I really do appreciate you writing in, brother, and spreading the word about the show, because that's what these reviews do. They really do help the show out as far as getting the word out is concerned. So much appreciation there. And E_Soul_Rar, I think that's how you pronounce it, writes in to say, a great new find. I discovered Mr. Spam while browsing the Black Guy Who Tips website. I like his topics and his work stories. While I may not always agree, I enjoy his opinions. I'm looking forward to more shows, and I appreciate you with the 5-star review. And yeah, I'm trying to do it every week at least. But I do appreciate you writing into the show and letting your voice be heard. It's the real talk. But yeah, I got to get out of here, y'all. I appreciate you guys writing into the show. But before I get out of here, of course, I do have to remind you guys how to get at me here at the Spare Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. You can hit me up on the hotline. Leave me those voicemail messages. I haven't gotten one in a while, but leave me one of those voicemail messages. The area code is 313. The phone number is 288-0485. That's 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. I will play those messages and respond to those here on the show. You can send me an email. The email is feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Let me know what you're thinking. Send me those emails. I'll read those and reply to those here on the show. Also, you can hit me up on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms, of course, is Mr_Span. Check me out on both of those platforms, Twitter and Instagram. And for all of your Span Report needs, go to thespanreport.com. Check out this episode. Check out other episodes. All of the videos associated with this episode will be available on this episode's page at thespanreport.com. And also, leave me a review on iTunes. Leave me a review on Stitcher. Let me know what you're thinking. I need your thoughts, people. I need your thoughts. And until next time, I'll talk to you guys again later. Peace.